I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
It's a beautiful day in Dublin today, so we're actually taking the Skin On podcast outside.
We're off road.
Yes, we're going on tour.
We're off the map.
We have moved from where we were inside the lighthouse to just outside the lighthouse. So, you know, it's...
Lighthouse, we are watching you.
We are lighthouse adjacent.
We are indeed.
We still love you, we promise.
So I'm going to start off, as usual, with some movie news. Some fairly disappointing news to start off with. Rumours have it, and it's a scoop from Latino Review, that John McClane is coming back.
Die
Hard 6.
6, really?
Yeah. And Samuel Jackson's Zeus Carver is going to return to.
Well, I'd like that, but why? I mean, these people must have seen Die Hard 5, surely, before they made this decision.
I haven't seen Die Hard 5.
Don't.
I haven't seen Die Hard. I have seen Die Hard 4. Wished I hadn't seen Die Hard.
Die Hard 4 is actually okay next to Die Hard 5.
Yeah, I think they may have seen the box office returns for Die Hard 5, which were decent.
All
but not
that
great.
Matters. That's all. When you're talking about sequels, that is all that matters. Mm. It doesn't matter. Quality doesn't come into it.
Yeah.
Even diminishing returns is fine.
When Die Hard 3 was first made, the notion of, you know, the franchise didn't exist as we know it now. Now it has become a franchise, you know, so it's...
Yeah, it was a trilogy, I suppose, when it comes out. I mean, I remember seeing it in the cinema, aging myself, but and going, that's actually not bad. Three films that are actually pretty decent, as it goes.
Well, of course, the first is an action classic. Second one is brilliant.
I really like it.
Yeah,
really like it.
The third one is a heck of a lot of fun.
Yes.
Firm R-rated fun. It's great.
Yeah, no, it's one of the seminal ticking time bomb, literally, in some instances, yeah, type film. You know, the chase around the city to get to the wherever.
And Jeremy Irons having a whale of a time.
But I would suggest that if they are going to make Die Hard 6, John McTiernan's out of prison.
He is.
Just give him the gig, for the love of God, people.
He made Die Hard. What more do you want?
Like, I mean, that's a CV. There's his interview. I made this, guys. I want to see that.
Oh, I meant that.
$300 million for the last Die Hard, so off a budget of about 120.
That's not a great return.
It's
really
not bad for a
especially
film.
When you factor in the advertising as well.
Yeah, but you also factor in the stinging reviews.
Is that true?
That's not bad.
True. Oh well. As soon as you put a name like Die Hard to a product, I guess people go, oh, gotta go see that.
Yeah, but they need to come up with another pun now of what can you put the words Die Hard into.
Refuse to Die Hard.
Die Hard in a dinghy.
Who knows? Still die hardening. It's just, I don't know.
That sounds like a porn version of Die Hard.
It probably is already.
There is definitely one.
There is. If there's not, there should be.
Okay, we're going to move on to... I'm going to do them in ascending order, so slightly better news. Warner Bros. Have put a date on when they're going to release the Guy Ritchie franchise opener, King Arthur.
Yay.
So Guy Ritchie is taking on King Arthur, the
really? That's a fight I want to see.
No, but the King Arthur legend is ripe for for a big story. I mean, the last version of it, which was shot here in Ireland, was not very good.
Yeah, but it's going to be better than...
Are you referring to the...
I'm talking to the Keira Knightley starring...
Oh, the Antoine Fuqua.
I'm sorry, I was not great. I think the John Borman...
Excalibur...
But it was great.
Excalibur is a great film,
and they were talking about rebooting Excalibur for a long time because this is what they want to do, but now they're moving in a different direction. They've got Guy Ritchie on board.
It's an interesting idea until you mention Guy Ritchie. I just don't think the man can direct action.
I just don't care.
No,
the man can direct action. There's some lovely action set pieces in Sherlock Holmes.
I don't know, too much slow-mo for me, and that film I think is too, it's over stylized. I'm not a fan of either film.
I think that may be the issue when it comes to King Arthur. He may attempt to over-stylize.
He over-stylizes everything. He can't direct traffic.
Sorry. Well, we'll see. He's in post-production on The Man from U.N.C.L.E. at the moment.
Oh, for the love of God. Is there nothing he won't destroy? Why didn't he give him Godzilla? He would have destroyed.
He couldn't destroy Jason Statham's career. And he was in Revolver, for goodness sake.
He destroyed Madonna.
Well, we can thank him for that. Actually, I say more than likely Madonna destroyed him.
That might be the case, yeah. Anyway, better news of a better movie, but
good.
Sad news to do with a better movie. David Fincher has dropped out of the proposed Steve Jobs biopic based on the script by Aaron Sorkin.
Yes,
allegedly, it's over the $10 million directorial fee he was commanding from Sony.
They were only prepared to offer him 9. What a struggle his life is.
Well, I think he'd be worth it because he is a fantastic director. Yeah. But that said, I would be more sad about that news until, and I'm sure this is going to be an item that comes up later, until I saw the Gone Girl trailer.
Meh.
See, I liked the Gone Girl trailer, so, but apparently I'm alone on this.
I remember seeing The Shining trailer cut as a comedy. You know, they keep doing those trailers. That was great fun. That looked like the Two to Wonder trailer cut as a trailer. Ben Affleck walking in their rooms.
Yeah.
I just didn't care.
The teaser poster was extraordinary, though.
It looks pretty good.
Pretty good, but I suppose my big problem with the trailer is the look of it. It's identical to The Social Network. It feels like Fincher and Jeff Cronenweth with DP are attempting nothing new there. So that's a big no-no for me.
But it may be that they're just trying to force teaser to please the fans and that the film may be something different.
Admittedly, this has a lot of expectation around it. So,
yeah, based on the Gillian Flynn best-selling novel, it's got Ben Affleck in the lead role, Rosamund Pike, Emily Ratajkowski, the model, is
John Cusack out of a decade-long hibernation in bad movies, coming back into something. Or is that John Cusack? Is it?
What?
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of Maps of the Stars.
There we go. Yes, the trailer also dropped today.
I both didn't say that. That was my confusion.
Yeah, that one is has a lovely "Not Suitable for Work" tag attached to it. The Gone Girl one, not so much.
Yeah.
But I wasn't a fan of either trailer.
The sad thing about the Gone Girl trailer is that the teaser is that the last two that he made, in particular the one for the girl with Dragon Tattoo, was staggering.
That was one of the best trailers in years.
Yes,
incredible stuff.
Yeah.
That's how you tease.
And the one before that was the Social Network's Creep, which is also a work of genius. So. Yeah. And he does them himself. He cuts his own trailer. So he's one of the very few directors to do that.
Yeah. So. No, we'll see.
He does a good job, but this case, yeah, I'm not big on that.
So, we're going to move on to the Irish Box Office Top 10, as per usual.
Hey.
So,
I have a sad feeling I know what's going to be number one, but oh well.
At number 10, and now in its 9th week in the charts, is the Warner Animation's The Lego Movie.
So not Nonstop.
Nonstop has now sadly departed.
Oh. Has now stopped.
Nonstop has now reached the terminal and has deboarded.
Yay.
I think this is possibly the last time we'll talk about The Lego Movie then in that regard.
It is quite possible. It made €18,458 at the box office, so that's quite low.
Aww.
9 weeks in, but $3.275 million.
It's
that's great.
It's going to be up there. It's
worth every
penny. Yeah, I agree. It was very good, very good.
Is a staggering success. At 9, and also probably in this last week in the charts, for the 6th week in a row, the Grand Budapest Hotel.
I'll miss these two. I really will.
Yeah, because you know they're not going to be replaced by anything nearly as good.
No.
This has been a sad thing.
This has been an extraordinary first few months for films. When you think about that, we got The Lego Movie, we got Grand Budapest Hotel, we got Under the Skin. Just even those three alone, they're going to be in my top 10.
Like you might hear us complain in the summer when it's 10. God,
we're going to turn to right grumpy old men as the months wear on.
Yes, we are.
So stay tuned, folks.
At 9, and the lowest new entry in the charts, and surprising in that it didn't do much better, is The Raid 2. The Raid 2 made only almost 28,000 at the box office.
From how many screens?
17 screens. 1,600 per location.
Not a brilliant average.
Not a great debut considering the fan base the first one had.
Would it be to do with length? You know, the screenings?
It's kind of to do with rating, content matter, and the language barrier.
Yeah. Mm.
And I mean, it's terrible that these are the barriers to it, but an 18's rating
automatically.
Dredd had it too.
How does it compare to The Raid, do we know?
I haven't been able to check the figures. I haven't got the figures for The Raid, so
it'd be interesting to know how that played.
Yeah, but I did compare it to Dredd, and Dredd actually did better.
Well, Dredd had a 3D.
It did have the 3D
which didn't help, I didn't think, in some ways, because a lot of people, the adult audience, it may be an interesting that an older audience would be put off with 3D. Well, I saw it in
2D.
I couldn't get a 2D screen when I got around to seeing it at last. But.
I'll say this much, I enjoyed Dread more than I enjoyed The Raid 2.
And then some.
Because at least the Redux of Dread had the good mind to be efficient about it, rather than all that bloat and excessive plot.
It didn't fill me with Dread. Sorry.
But The Raid 2 is enjoyable. It's an enjoyable experience.
It is, and I have to be careful as well, because it's easy to have a go with it for the myriad of problems it has, and it does have, but there is some staggeringly brilliant stuff in it.
Yeah, the choreography of the fight scenes is still top.
The camera work, I think, is
extraordinary.
The camera work in the car chase is brilliant as well.
Mm.
There's handoffs of the camera between different cameramen to get different angles, and during continuous shots. It's just mind-boggling.
It's remarkably lo-fi stuff, and it works great in those scenes.
It feels like that, more importantly. It doesn't feel the cameras are digitally moving around, or it feels like a real thing.
Evans has been talking about how he coordinated the camera to be part of the choreography of the fight scenes, so that it always felt natural, that there was no rushed shots, that you could always see every move within the action, and so that's
well, it works. I mean, it works in that regard.
Yeah. It's significantly better than the Zack Snyder rap speeding type way of shooting an action sequence, where you slow it down and then speed it up.
I don't know why you'd want to depress me for being Zack Snyder, but anyway, I agree. And
I think
The Raid 2 is an interesting film. It's flawed in many ways, and not nearly as good as the first one. Not as smart and as sharp.
No.
The version, but there's some great stuff in it, so I wouldn't put out anything I've seen it.
You really should go see it, and it's a pity that it's so far down in the charts.
It is
a very, very
maybe
good
word
film.
Of mouth might help. Maybe. It was rapturously reviewed, generally speaking,
although on aggregate the reviews haven't been quite as strong as for the first film. People are, some critics are, including me, said they were taking issue with the excessive length, the excessive plotting, but for action aficionados, they're going to be in heaven. Absolute nirvana when some of these scenes come up.
Actually, I read some people are kind of revising down the first film in comparison, were people really loving the film, that first film, that much, this way it's such an improvement, and it's like, people really love the first film.
No, that would be a mistake to revise. I loved it, but anybody I know else did.
I don't think it's perfect, but I think it's ruthlessly efficient at what it does.
There's a hilariously funny but reductive comparison in Don Clark's review for The Raid 2, where he compares it to Donkey Kong.
Yes, he does.
It's brilliant, but incredibly reductive, because it is more than just
the first film.
The second film.
I compared the first one to Streets of Rage, where you go up to the boss levels and stuff. but I can see where he's coming from. It is funny, though. It made me laugh.
It is quite good. Now, at 7 is the second new entry in the week, and the one that Alan last week called, pretty appalling.
Yeah.
The Quiet Ones, Hammer Horror.
That's interesting that it beat The Raid 2, in terms of comparative reactions.
It beat it, but it played in a lot more screens.
It did.
Obviously, that's the problem.
42 locations, so it's much wider release. Made half the money per location that The Raid 2 did, so.
Yeah, there you go. The Raid 2 probably has more staying power.
We would hope.
Yes.
Well, we can hope.
Alan really, really sold it last week. It sounded dreadful. Mm. I will not see it. I imagine it won't be there for much longer.
Probably not.
Bye-bye.
No, I say it's a one and done film. At 6, then, in its third official release weekend, is Muppets Most Wanted.
Slipping down. We don't
doing
care.
Better than I thought it would, in some ways.
It has a family appeal. Easter's coming up next weekend, so they'll have a carry over there.
The Lego might even hang on. The Lego movie might even hang on for a little bit longer.
Let's say it's still playing in a few locations. Our point is this: go see the Lego movie
rather than Muppets Most Wanted.
Keep the Lego movie in the top 10.
And if you've seen the Lego movie already and are considering going to see the Muppets movie, probably go see the Lego movie again.
Yes,
agreed.
It's
just better.
Mm.
At 5, and in the second week, it's dropping. Well, not dropping much, but dropping 44% in total. Divergent, the adaptation of the Veronica Roth at young adult novel.
Right.
So I have now had a chance to see this. It is, if you haven't read the books, you will have pretty much no idea why anything happens in it. The plot is nonsense if you haven't read the books, because you don't understand how humanity can be divided into just five factions based on character traits. So the idea is that there are certain characters, there are certain factions that you go into based on whether you're a kind and generous person, you go into this one. If you're a fighter, you go into this one. If you're, you know, I don't, there's five of them anyway, and it's just...
Hang on, kind and generous, or a fighter. What's to stop the fighters from killing off all the rest of that good fighters?
Well, no, you see, then they also have to have the other aspects. So the five factions work in unison together. It is...
I'm already confused, and I haven't seen the damn thing.
I've got to check it out.
So the concept is that she's Divergent, Shailene Woodley's character, and Triss. And so she doesn't fit into any one faction. So she can flit between certain ones because she has compassion, but she also is a fighter, but she also has some of the other attributes that are required.
Jesus.
No, no. So she's basically a normal person. Okay. Everybody has yin and yang. Everyone has good and bad. Everyone has the ability to be a fighter when cornered, or to be compassionate.
I'm a natural coward, yeah, so. I don't know if I have that, but anyway.
Ah, you could surprise us. I don't know, this but all just sounds like the Hunger Games without the politics, and does not very interesting.
It has got a political type element to it too, but not to the same extent. You have to get as far as Allegiant, which is the third book in the series, which is
being split in two,
appallingly bad, and being split in two, before you understand why how society came to be the way it is. But because it's better explained in the books, you're willing to go with it more than you are in the film. So if you've seen the film, if you read the books, you'll like the film. If you haven't read the books, it's highly unlikely that you will like it that much.
What a ringing endorsement.
I haven't read the books, so I probably won't read them.
As we said last week, they're not aimed at you there, Jay.
They bloody well should be. I pay good money for books / movies / whatever.
But not these
aim
books.
Stuff at me, damn it.
Yeah, see, anyway. The stuff that's aimed at you is made by Brian De Palma.
No, it isn't. It really isn't. It's made by Lars von Trier.
Ah, yeah. There's only one of him, though, sadly.
There was a great interview with Jeremy Thomas, the film producer in Empire, I think at the end of last week. And he was talking about the kind of choices he's made in his career. And you're talking about how your Lars von Trier would direct your young adult film. He was asked... he was talking about superhero movies and how he never kind of played the game of being popular. He said, who'd direct my version of Spider-Man? Wong Kar-wai.
Wong Kar-wai's Spider-Man would be amazing.
It would. It would be a little slow as Spider-Man movies go, but by God, it would be gorgeous.
Yeah, and you'd have a beautiful central love story.
And Tony Leung would play Norman Osborn, and I'd be there front row center.
Also, I'd go to see it. Spider-Man. Which, alas, I will not be doing with it.
Spider-Man will be coming up later in the show.
We talked.
So, moving on from Divergent onto last week's number two, wasn't it? Captain America: The Winter Soldier. So it's dropped to four. It's dropped 41%. This is its third release weekend. Still, it's good for 122,000 and to pass 1 million at the Irish box office. So
I expected this to do a little better.
It has been doing better in America, and it's doing well here comparatively. I mean, as far as the Phase 2 movies go, it's better than Thor: The Dark World, but not Iron Man 3, but nothing is Iron Man 3. I mean, Iron Man 3 made 1 billion at the global box office.
Iron Man 4, when it comes along in 2020, whatever, will do...
It'll be sooner than that, I'd say.
No, probably on Iron Man 6, maybe.
Captain America, good fun. It's a good comic book superhero film. It tries to do something different and then devolves into the generic Marvel end. But I like it. I have seen it more than once, and I will see it again.
Good
so
for you. Really?
Yeah, because I'm a Marvel geek. But, you know, I listen to the soundtracks. Yeah, yes. I spent all of last...
I want to talk.
I spent all of last weekend at Comic-Con in the RDS. So,
We'll hear your report on that shortly, I'm sure.
At number three... holding at number three, Rio 2.
Ah.
The animated sequel to Rio.
It's the time of year, isn't it? I mean...
It is. It's a
kids' entertainment. It's midterms.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the original. It's fine, but the songs aren't as good as the original. And
hardly ever.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Exactly. That's all
your enthusiasm there, Niall.
It shines through at the end.
Compared to the Lego movie, it's just, you know.
No other animated film this year is going to compare to the Lego movie.
Well, there's no Pixar this year.
Now, there's a
even
thing.
If there was, it probably wouldn't
compare. Oh, no, because next picture is Inside Out, and that looks extraordinary.
It does.
At least it's not a sequel. Anyway.
True.
I'm not getting involved in that. Anyway.
Having finally seen Monsters University, I'm saying thank the Lord it's not a sequel.
Monsters University is one of these films that dares to do something different, and it tells kids that you can dream, but you also have to be a little bit realistic because your dreams may not come true.
But
it's not very good, though.
And you say it tries to tell kids that your dreams may not come true, but their dreams do come true at the end.
Spoiler alert. Well, they don't, though.
Do they not?
No.
They become scarers.
Careful, lads. People may not have seen.
I said spoiler alert, and besides, I'm not recommending it by any manner of means.
Monsters University is a good kids movie.
It's cute.
It is not up there with Pixar's best.
It's mid division at best.
Mm.
Anyway, moving on to number two. Last week's number one, Noah. Darren Aronofsky's Noah.
I think we like it.
This is the thing. I said
after a week, I think I like it. I think I do. I wouldn't put out anybody go to see it. And I've only talked to one other person who's seen it this week and didn't know what to make of it. So it seems to be a baffling exercise.
Like that. Well,
I know I don't love it. I like it. That's as good as I can give it. But I am glad I saw it.
I don't think I'll ever love it. But if it came on TV 2 years from now, I'm sure it's not going to stay up and watch it.
It'll never replace The Fountain or Requiem for a Dream of
Pie in your top three
Aronofsky's.
I'm glad he's out there making these batty films. Like,
absolutely batty.
It's important that he's doing them for everyone.
It's important that he got the budget that he got and managed to not blow it. You know, that he managed to recoup the budget back.
It is important, I completely agree. And it's important for filmmakers to see somebody taking a shot at it like that.
Only problem is, I fear, we'll start another wave of Bible films. And, I mean, they just don't work.
Passion of the Christ didn't, and it was a far more successful film.
But that had a lot of things that kind of might have put people off as well. The language barrier for one, the excessive violence for another.
But it made so much money that surely people would have been bandwagon jumpers, and especially the way that the Hollywood industry works, is that they would have went, oh, look at how much that made, we should be churning out Jesus flicks. And there's lots of Jesus flicks, and there's a load of them coming in the next couple of months in the US.
I would say to that,
I don't see it. I mean, the greatest Bible stories have pretty much been told. I mean, Cecil B. DeMille's Ten Commandments, it was on the weekend in the IFI, inglorious 70mm. It was staggering to watch. But
I'd have gone to see that, except I have enduring memories of my teacher showing our class that when we were 10 or thereabouts. It took most of the day, so we were happy enough. And Chuck Heston being booming and entertaining as he was, and so on and so forth, and my God, that beard is luscious, and my goodness, that bush is clearly not burning, so on and so forth.
All of the best Bible stories that have been told in recent times have been told by two people, the Coen brothers.
It's true.
Because their stories are repeatedly the story of Job over and over again.
A Serious Man is the best adaptation of Job I can think of.
I will say, though, if we're going to get a spate of Bible or biblical films.
Well, it's happening.
If we get directors like Darren Aronofsky's take on it, if you get filmmakers of that caliber, I'd watch them do anything. It doesn't make a difference what story is. You have good filmmakers doing.
I think, though, getting a filmmaker like Aronofsky to do a film like that would be the kind of blip we're talking about.
What Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ?
What we need is that, how long ago was that?
We need Werner Herzog's Paradise Lost.
Yes. But you never know.
We'd never sleep again. That'd be freaking terrifying.
But isn't it the same as like superhero movies? If there's 50 superhero movies and 10 of them are directed by interesting directors, they're more likely going to be the more interesting films.
Yeah, but it's not every day you get Christopher Nolan to direct a superhero movie.
The thing was, the best of the sort of notable film directors are the ones that would be considered stellar or even Academy Award winning film directors. Ang Lee, and his Hulk did not go down
but
that
I really
well.
Like this Hulk.
Yeah. His Hulk is okay. I find it watchable, but I cannot give it much more than that.
It's daring.
It's daring, but
far the most comic-y
movie
to have been done with
the panels. I really liked it. Sorry, but maybe that was made for me. That was aimed at me. Finally, somebody listened to me.
That's your superhero movie. Ang Lee's the Hulk. Ang Lee's Hulk.
I've heard that line so many times that film came out, and it never gets old.
Use it, it's embarrassing. Anyway.
Chris Christopherson as well, you know.
Chris Christopherson's the Hulk.
Sorry, it was Nick Nolte.
Nick Nolte.
Imagine Chris. I want to see Chris Christopherson and Nick Nolte together playing a pair of brothers.
The screen could not contain it.
Put in Bruce Dern there, and I think we're on to
it. And son is Gary Busey.
Yes, and Gary Busey, yeah. That's
it. I want to see that movie. That John, has to be in 70
and John Hurt is their uncle.
Directed by John Milius.
Oh, if only.
Sadly.
That's the right film, dude.
You know what? We've gone fantastically off point here, and I don't care. I'm having too much of a laugh.
Let's bring it back to the
podcast. There's only one thing left to go. It is our number one. It's an Irish film at number one, which is great. It's lovely to see an Irish film at number one. It's Calvary. Calvary is number one.
It did very well.
It did. No surprise, it's been advertised to death. It's got some stellar reviews. And again, I'm happy to see an Irish film at number one. Just, I wish it were a better one.
A couple of things I'd say about it. One, no matter what I think for an Irish film, I think the fact that people go to see it is good and it's important. Because the more that happens, so you've seen it with Stag and then follow up by the Calvary, that's two Irish films that people have gone to see in very decent numbers.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing. It means the audience trust towards Irish films might be a little more repaired and a little more interesting, so that may happen a little more in the future. Mm. Fingers crossed, that's a very iffy fingers crossed. But the second thing is,
we have Lenny's Frank coming too, so we could.
Exactly.
And who knows, it could be on a renaissance here, a beginning of one.
I think there's something interesting about
the Renaissance.
Irish films.
And you're claiming copyright on that.
I'm claiming it now, the Renaissance.
But if we advertise, I think it's really interesting marketing of Irish films that there's the small budgets, marketing budgets of Irish films, generally speaking, are minuscule. So, like all Hollywood, even crap Hollywood films that get advertised the hell out of here, do pretty well at the box office, like even the first week or 2 weeks before word of mouth kills them. There's a lesson learned in the sense that if Irish films advertise, if there's a marketing budget behind it, they may just go see them because they're aware of them. Even like the non-general cinema going public may go, oh, look, we're one trip to the cinema per week or per month, let's go see this one, this looks good. Because you see how it's advertised, you see how Calvary's advertised on TV and looks much broader as a comedy in the advertising of it. It's really interesting how it's being marketed.
We don't do a cinema score here in Ireland, but the cinema score, for those of you who don't know, is a thing that they do in US cinemas where they ask people after they come out of a movie how well the film was marketed to them, and they rate it on a scale from A to F. And so sometimes movies, really good movies like The Wolf of Wall Street, score quite low on the cinema score. So it was down at C because people went into it thinking it was going to be a much broader comedy than it was, or went into it thinking it was going to be a more Scorsese film than it was. And so it got a C. So I would imagine the Calvary would actually score quite low on the cinema score rating if it was implemented here, because it is being marketed much more broadly than it actually is.
Not in the cinema, though. I think I've seen trailer in the cinema. It's kind of more close to the tone of the film. In the TV advertising, it's much broader.
Yeah, don't be under any misconception if you're thinking you're going to see it. It is quite dark.
It's not a comedy. It's funny in parts, but it's not a comedy.
It's darkly funny. That's why.
It's not blackly funny that people are portraying. There's nothing in it. There's dark humor throughout.
You are talking about the idea of impending death. So there is that. And
I mean, I don't know about all of us, Nan. You're probably a little more of a fan than
I'm the highest of the three of us. Brian would be the highest of the side.
Yeah, and it's fine. And as I said before, I mean, it's great to see. It's great to see people go see it. I just have a problem with how people pitch it, how the kind of hyperbole about it. But aside from that, go see it. It's good to see the original doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is. It's absolutely marvellous. It's not making Gard money, but it is making extraordinary money. €5,520.
I don't think anything will make
Gard
money.
That said, though, of the top 10, I would tell anybody, just go see the Lego movie again while you have the chance.
No, but in fairness, looking at the overall top 10, Calvary's worth watching. Noah's worth watching. Rio 2 isn't. Captain America is divergent. Is if you've read the book. Muppets Most Wanted is something you can watch on TV. The Quiet Ones is rubbish. Raid 2 is well, in my experience, you have to see it there. As is Grand Budapest Hotel and as is Lego Movie. So we overall...
It's more good than bad.
It is.
So that's positive.
For us cynical moany feckers, it is more good
than
bad.
For the last 2 weeks, we did have things like Nonstop and... what was the one with Kevin Hart?
We had Ride Along, like we had 300, yeah, there's 2, no, we yeah. had the... Yeah.
They're getting weeded out, I think.
That's okay. Need for Speed as well. So.
We're opening a list at the moment.
Exactly. Okay. Next, but it won't happen.
So I'm going to move on to next week. So, or what's out this week? Okay. So what's out this week?
What is out this week, Noah?
Right. Yeah, then let's see interesting. So there's a couple of decent movies. I'm going to let, Philip start off with Locke. Tom Hardy starring Locke.
I read your fine review.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, I've had to give it a... I'm glad you think it was a fine review because it is a fine film. It's very much kind of low... we've all heard of high concept films. This is either the highest of high concepts or the lowest of low concepts. I don't know. But basically, Tom Hardy driving and talking. And he's the only person we actually see in the film. It's a gambit, a structural gambit, but it works particularly well in this case. The plot is he plays Ivan Locke, who is a construction site manager, and he's on the cusp of this big job pouring like over 200 tons of concrete for a big...
Create the largest skyscraper in the UK.
Exactly. In Birmingham.
For the largest skyscraper in the north of the UK, or the Midlands of the UK. It's a
big skyscraper.
It's not quite the Shard, but it is. Yeah, it's a big skyscraper.
I think someone has skyscraper in it. Anyway, but the night before this job is to take place, he scrams out of there and starts driving south to London. The reason for that is...
Well, yeah, you can't.
I won't say that. I mentioned in the review.
Okay, but...
Have you seen the film?
I have, and I love it, but I think that it's important that you know that this man's on a journey, and that while on the journey, he is making phone calls...
That will change his life.
And his life is changing dramatically during the course of this film. But... I think everything else, every plot point in it is some spoiler in some way. So,
well, I give away two that are revealed pretty early on. But as a film goes on...
It's fair game.
Like within, say, the first half hour.
If it's within the first third, then yeah, okay.
Yeah, but then as things goes on, further complications arise. And basically he spends most of the film while driving, talking to, making calls to his site, his boss, his underling, who's fantastically hilarious, Andrew Scott.
Yeah. Oh, no, Andrew Scott, the voice is just... Because he's a disembodied voice on the end of the phone, but still, he is hilariously funny.
He just sounds so exasperated. It's a joy. But, so he's calling him, he's calling his boss, and he's calling his wife and children. And the film is only... It's just under 90 minutes long, but in that 90 minutes, you watch a man's entire life go to pot.
Yeah.
And the worst part is, he is doing his level best to make everything right, even though we really can't be sure that he will.
Yeah, no, it's like Calvary, is the story of a righteous man. It is the story of a guy trying to do the right thing, while circumstances around him, and circumstances of his own making, are conspiring to his downfall. So
It's a simple idea with a lot of very relevant themes.
And Tom Hardy has an absolutely extraordinary Welsh accent.
Pitch perfect.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. I don't know why he doesn't need to have a Welsh accent, but it's still quite brilliant.
Yeah. And I've never seen a film make me care so much about concrete before.
Yes. And it's the way he says it. The
concrete?
The Welsh way of saying concrete. It's just lovely. Because it's all shot inside the car with one or two establishing shots, so it is set very much in one location.
Yeah.
But they find ways to make that interesting. They do use different camera angles, but all while still around the car itself.
And the most thing they use is Hardy. I mean, this must be one of his best performances.
Yeah. And it spends so long on his face.
The film, and it's so expressive, even though it's behind... a beard.
A luscious beard, though. It's a marvellous beard. It's not Calvary level beard.
Now he has beard envy. Good grief.
I do, because I can't grow one. So yeah, so Locke is an absolutely extraordinary film.
It is. It's grounded by a great central performance, some fine supporting turns, essentially just voiceover turns, but they do great nonetheless. And
beautiful cinematography.
Yes, indeed. It's a great looking film. It makes the most of its setting as well, going down the motorway, the streetlights being reflected on the windshield. It looks great. And
the windshield. American now, so yes.
I beg your pardon.
The windscreen.
Oh, whatever. They know what I mean. And very tightly scripted and directed by Stephen Knight. He is the writer of Eastern Promises. He also directed Jason Statham's film Hummingbird.
Yeah. Redemption.
Depending on where you were saw it. But this is a fine film. It'd be my recommendation for this weekend if you're going out to the cinema. Well,
I will be taking the recommendation for both of you and seeing it this weekend.
Yeah, good. It was at the Dublin Film Festival.
It was at the London Film Festival as well. I was talking to somebody who, a friend of mine, read my review, and she just basically went on a gush about Tom Hardy. Oh my god, he's so whatever. And then I informed her, you did notice he said he has a Welsh accent. And then her face really dropped so quickly. Oh no. That man, having seen him, he had, at the screening of Locke I was at, he was there. He just completely charms the whole crowd. It's a voice that could loosen knicker elastic at 100 paces.
Beautiful. They should put it on the poster.
Not with the accent, I doubt.
If you've seen the poster for Locke, there's enough people gushing over it on the poster.
Deservedly so.
Yes, absolutely.
It sounds good. I mean,
the other big release, that'll open fairly wide, but not that wide. But the one that's the big release, so out tomorrow, Amazing Spider-Man 2. So myself and Philip went along to see this.
I didn't actually.
Oh, you didn't
actually? I couldn't make it in the end.
No. Well, but
I had a good excuse.
What was your excuse?
I got a new widescreen TV and Blu-ray player. Go me! And region free, too.
I really thought you were going to say it because I didn't want to see it.
Well, that too. But now, you see, I didn't want to see it because I saw the first one. And I don't mind a superhero film, but this is another young adult romance posing as a superhero flick.
I'm sorry, the central romance in The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is the reason to see it. It is perfectly pitched.
Great, but I wanted a superhero movie.
But there's also, hung around it, is actually quite a good superhero movie.
But it shouldn't be hung around it, it should be the point. The two should work in tandem.
Yeah, okay.
Admittedly, I'm talking about a film I haven't seen. So
yeah, it's got...
Enlighten me.
For 40 minutes, it is one of the best superhero movies that has ever been made. Okay?
What a bold statement.
It is absolutely extraordinarily close to the comic. It is extraordinarily close to the animated series in the early 90s. It is...
I love that show.
Absolutely perfect for about 40 minutes.
Are we talking about the first 40 minutes?
No, it's not the first 40 minutes,
right?
It's 40 minutes after the first 10 minutes of utter gubbins has happened, and then, which is the first 10 minutes is, this is how Peter Parker's parents met their fate. That's how it opens. So right from the off, you have an action spectacular type scene, but has huge emotional stakes for what follows, right? But it is, so you're on a downer, right? Immediately, you're on a downer because of this scene. And then it kicks off, where Peter is swinging through, he's fighting against bad guys, has a chase through New York, he's trying to make it in time to his college graduation, or his high school graduation, where Gwen is giving
high school. He must be the world's oldest adolescent.
Yeah, so well,
it was like 40, isn't it?
That's not fair. No, but this is all very much believable that he's fighting away against these people because he is Spider-Man, but he's also Peter Parker and trying to make it to this high school graduation where Gwen Stacy is giving the valedictorian speech. He's trying to make it back in time to be able to see that, and it's working very well. It's judged very well. You've got nice back and forth between him and the bad guys, and he's making wise arse remarks, and that's what he does. I mean, that's what he does in the comics, that's what he's doing on screen. He looks like he's having much more fun in the role. He looks like he's having much more fun as Spider-Man.
Well, that's good, because I never thought the first one was much fun.
Yeah, so this is what I'm saying. So this is great. You're seeing a young kid coming to terms with his power, having great fun, stopping bad guys, making wise. It is, you know, it is quite an enjoyable experience. And then you reach one of the first sort of main battle sequences where you've Times Square against Electro, and yeah, no, it's fine. And then it devolves from there, because once Electro becomes super powered, he turns into the least interesting villain ever.
This is Jamie
Foxx. He gets terrible dialogue. Terrible, terrible dialogue. He also looks exactly like Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen.
The blue glow.
I thought he looks silly in the trailer now. That's
yeah,
it.
But it,
be preposterous.
It's...
But that's just me.
Yeah, and it's got those problems. It has... Then it brings in the Harry Osborn character, and he loses it and becomes Green Goblin, and you've got all of that situation going on. And so you've got a bad guy who set up at the start. You've got who eventually becomes the Rhino. You've got Electro as a bad guy, and you've got the Green Goblin. So you've got three bad guys
in the second film. The last time they did Spider-Man, that killed the third.
Yeah, and yeah. So
lessons were not learned, but it sounds good.
So no. If you had taken out, I mean, the relationship between Peter and Dane DeHaan, or between and Harry Osborn or Andrew Garfield and Dane DeHaan is quite good. The relationship between Gwen Stacy and Peter Parker, or between Andrew Garfield and his real life girlfriend Emma Stone, is very good. It is very, very good and very believable. And so those two things, good. You don't need to have made the move to the Green Lantern this early. You could have
the Green Goblin.
You're mixing your spirit or something.
Sorry.
You're mixing up your universe. That's DC, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
And I know nothing about comics. I know that much.
You don't need to move to the Green Goblin this early. You could have teased it out a bit more. Mm. But you're dealing all the time with the same plot point. Peter Parker is trying to cope with the death of his Uncle Ben in the last film. He's trying to cope with the fact that his father and mother died when he was a small kid. So there's absent father figure there. Gwen Stacy lost her father in the first movie, so it's now his father figure there, right? Dane DeHaan's father, Norman Osborn, dies really early in the film. There's another absent father figure there. It's like
Spielberg couldn't cram in this much daddy issues in a film. My God,
Spielberg. That's a story.
So it's got all of these problems. So it's got a very underdeveloped character within Electro. It's got another super villain that you don't need with the Green Goblin, and it's got tonal imbalance problems throughout. But when it's swinging, it is absolutely brilliant.
So do you say there's like 40 minutes of a great superhero movie there?
Yeah.
How long is the film?
The film's just over 2 hours.
Ah.
Yeah. That's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Early. It is a problem, but it's an overcomable problem because you're having fun throughout. You're actually enjoying watching this film. But there are flaws. So it is the definitive 3-star comic book film. Okay. You know, it is...
Yeah. It's I don't know, I feel like I've had enough of those already, to be honest.
Yeah,
yeah, agreed.
If it had paired back the angst, if it had, or the attempts at that, if it had focused more on establishing the Day in the Hands Harry Osborn as Harry Osborn and not as a Green Lantern or a Green Goblin, I'm going to keep doing it now because you brought it up. And if it had Rhino is unnecessary, the Paul Giamatti character, you know, so if it had just focused on Electro's path, Peter's path, he could still find out about his dad and all that sort of stuff. It would be a tighter film, and it would be we could be looking at a properly memorable superhero film, and as it is, we're looking at it just a good one.
But the sound of that, it sounds like there's a problem with refinement there. Like, it lost a nerve in terms of what the cramming as much just to not let the film breathe.
It suffers from the same problem that Iron Man 2 suffered from, that it has to establish the universe that it's attempting to build.
Surely that's what the first film is for.
About to say that.
No, but see, the first film establishes a fair bit, but since that point, and I mean, the first film was cut to shreds because they had to take out a lot of the stuff that they had marketed was going to be in the first one, because after they finished filming, but before they released the film, they decided to make it into a much bigger universe. And since then, again, they decided to expand on the universe again.
So basically, more villains, more everything for the sake of money.
Yes, it's an answer to the Avengers.
I was going to say that. It sounds like they're trying to compare comparable kind of universe.
Yeah.
Which sounds idiotic. Sony, if they'd actually go their own path, they actually could have had an alternative to that.
Yeah, and Sony has one of the Marvel characters. It has Spider-Man. It also has his collective rogues gallery, but primarily it has Spider-Man. Marvel has lots of characters. Even Fox has two. It has X-Men, and there's lots of them. Yeah. And it has the Fantastic Four, and there's four of them.
The sound to me is that had they trusted their own way of doing it and, as I said, refined it, kept it even small to some degree and built it out.
Yeah.
In a very kind of calm and
very safe. Nothing.
It might have had something really interesting.
Exactly. That's what made the first two Sam Raimi movies work.
Yeah. If they didn't need to, Sony lacked the confidence.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
To move it forward, tease certain things. You can easily have
show and tell. I mean,
yeah, exactly. You know,
people will come back for number three.
If you do the second film quite well,
you burn people on number two. Who knows what they'll do on number three? And where do you go in number three if that's the case? I mean,
well, apparently
expand them more to six villains.
Well, exactly. The Sinister Six
is where they're moving.
Oh, good Lord, I guess that. I didn't even know that. That's how idiotic that is. Sorry,
there's a Sinister Six independent film coming. Drew Goddard is directing it, so that's actually
right. But isn't that a problem already? They're trying to have a Marvel universe. It's not having a Marvel universe.
Yeah, no, exactly. Based around one character, and he has some of the best villains of any superhero.
Sure, but won't end well. Is my prediction.
So far, it sounds like they're botching them. You say Electro isn't handled well. Rhino.
Rhino is not that he's handled well. Rhino is the character, the guy who becomes Rhino is introduced. Right. Then he goes to jail.
Uh-huh.
So then the movie happens, and then he comes back.
Yay.
As Rhino.
So, well, that's great, but the way they completely botched the Lizard in the first film, who is an incredibly tragic character, at least he should be, and instead, big generic green CGI thing.
One thing about this film, and this is when it doesn't jar, and every so often it goes out of sync and it jars, the 3D is actually really good in it. Because you've got a web-slinging superhero, you've got a guy who's going down and
3D,
through...
You would think more
yeah, exactly. So you've got him going down through skyscrapers and all the rest, and that, it's a ride. It is a visual experience. It is very good. But yeah, I really liked a lot of it. I wanted it to be better than it was.
One thing I want to say about the CGI, though, so if they can't get Spider-Man, with the money thrown, if they can't get Spider-Man swinging through the streets and you not enjoying the ride, they're doing something wrong. Like, I mean, for the love of God. I mean, that should be the minimum anyone should expect. Yeah. I will say that.
And it seems you say they it works. Have,
yeah, so. And Andrew Garfield is brilliant as Spider-Man. His portrayal in this is the best that we've seen Spidey on the big screen. It really is. He is perfect. He's pitch perfect as the wisecracking kid.
Philip, your brow furrowed there when you said that. Do you agree?
Well, did
my brow furrow?
It did a little bit.
Tobey Maguire films.
I try and forget the third one, to be honest.
Tobey
Maguire was just a little too old from the beginning.
Yeah.
He was fine, though.
He was okay, exactly. I mean, I haven't seen this film. I debate whether I will at all, but...
Ditto.
Yeah. I don't know. I prefer my superheroes, I guess, with a bit more... How do I put it? Either a bit more fun or a bit more grounded in reality. I think it's trying to find like a halfway house between Batman and the Avengers. And because the Avengers has the fun side of things, Batman is the darker side.
Yeah, but no, it's not really. There is a lot of dark things happening in it, but it's trying to be light and airy and have the dark stuff. So, but it's more trying to be the light and airy thing. But that's the tonal problem that it has. There's so much darkness, and then he's quipping in the next scene.
Yeah. So that was a problem I had with the first one, too.
I didn't even see the first one because I saw the trailer and looked horrendous, so I didn't bother.
I'd say unless you're a Dennis Leary fan, I wouldn't go out of your way.
So what we see today?
No, Emma Stone is lovely, come on.
Yeah, but
I can look up pictures of her on the internet if exactly. I want to. Do I need to see a film?
Exactly, or we can go back and watch Easy A or something like that.
Oh, I love Easy A, it's a great film.
Because Emma Stone's in it.
No, I love it anyway.
Niall's got an Emma Stone.
It's a good version of The Scarlet Letter.
It'd be better than the actual version of The Scarlet Letter with Demi Moore anyway.
Right.
Wouldn't be hard.
So, good lord. There is another really good film out this week. It's the Swedish film, We Are the Best.
Ah, the Lukas Moodysson.
Yes.
Lukas Moodysson having fun. I didn't think I'd ever see that.
So it's a story of like kids who try to form a punk rock band at the end of the 70s in Sweden.
It sounds like a hell of a lot of fun.
No, but yeah, it is. It's kids trying to play music. Right. Who knows? Of course that's fun.
Yeah.
Well, I'd imagine they'd have to try and have a bit of fun, considering that it's set in Sweden at the end of the 70s. Their biggest cultural icons at the time were ABBA and Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah.
How can we try to match between the happiness and the sadness? Spider-Man, there you go.
Well, if anybody can do it, I put my trust in Lukas Moodysson.
So would I.
Even though his repertoire up until this point has been incredibly dark at times.
Yeah. So this is not. This is much more fun. Sometimes. This is a lovely experience. So I recommend seeing We Are the Best.
Okay, excellent. I will take that on board and hopefully see it. Mm.
So also out next weekend, we have an Irish film. We have a film with an Irish actor. And we have Michael Cera. So I'm going to go with... I'm going to start the with the...
I'd like to see Michael Cera attempting an Irish accent.
The Irish film
has
got Irish actors in it, so... Yeah, but Michael Cera's not in it. So the Irish drama is John Banville's The Sea. So it's the adaptation of John Banville's The Sea.
Now, this... I have heard awful things about this as well. I haven't read the book, but of course it's critically acclaimed to the hilt.
Yeah.
And John Banville, I think... what I have read of him, he's a fine writer, but the reviews have been described this as boring as all hell, despite a very classy cast: Ciarán Hinds, Charlotte Rampling, Natasha McElhone, Rufus Sewell. I need more Rufus Sewell on screen. Dark City.
Yeah, but Night
Dark City
First Night or Night's Tale.
Yeah, but you know, everybody has. I think there's a lot of great actors who have that kind of role. Oscar Isaac and Robin Hood, he's another one. They have these medieval gel bouts that they just don't need.
The thing is,
it's a trend, trust me.
No, I really enjoy A Knight's Tale. It's one of those guilty pleasure films, but
it is.
He's dreadful in it.
He's hamming it up, bless him. Someone has to.
Yeah, he's a bad sheriff of Nottingham.
And Alan Rickman's a great one. Well, yes, but for the wrong reasons.
Alan Rickman's great at everything. So.
Yeah. This is true. This issue has cropped up before. We love Alan Rickman.
Hello, can Alan we get, Rickman.
Yes, hello, Alan Rickman.
Hello. So we also have Irish treasure and the man who has played the most convincing Irish accent of all time on screen, Pierce Brosnan, in The Love Punch.
Oh, now hang on. I almost want to give this a pass. I haven't seen it, but it has the... goddess, the wonder that is Emma Thompson.
Yeah, so we have Pierce Brosnan and Emma Thompson acting opposite one another.
It's a great combo.
It is a great combo.
It should be good. I want
to see Taffin teaming up with Margaret Schlegel to solve mysteries.
Maybe she shouldn't be living there.
Oh god, that film again. Sorry about that, folks.
But yeah, so I haven't seen it. No, nothing about it. Only that the poster looks terrifically boring.
I think this is a thing that Brosnan is trying to do now. He seems to be trying to corner the market on rom-coms targeted more at an older audience. He had that film last year, Love Is All You Need. It got very nice, it looked very sweet, got good reviews, and this looks like a slightly more comedic take
had a long way
on
down
that kind
as
of
well,
theme.
Very recently, he had a long way down.
Yeah.
And then,
which did not do so well critically.
No, and did not do so well at box office either. But
was it released?
It was. Yeah, it was released 4 weeks ago.
Wow! In fact, I had to ask. Well,
The novel wasn't particularly very good, I have to say. The Hornby novel.
And there's another film that wastes a very talented cast. You had Aaron Paul, Imogen Poots, Toni Collette.
Yeah, it's
And it looks like the sea did the same thing. And the Love Punch, well, we don't know. We haven't seen it.
Yeah,
but it looks affable enough. I'd be willing to give it a go. Maybe.
The next one, the last of the new releases this week, is the Michael Cera starring Chilean thriller Magic Magic.
Hang on. Michael Cera Chilean.
The Magic Michael, we could call it.
This is... Is this a sequel to Magic Mike? No one wants it.
No.
It's a
supernaturally type horror thriller type thing in South America. I will have a review up by the end of the week.
I look forward to reading that.
Have you seen it?
I haven't watched it yet, but I have got it as a screener to watch, and I will.
Is this the one also with Juno Temple?
Yes.
Ah, I like Juno Temple.
Yeah, so I...
Killer Joe.
Fantastic.
Stay tuned to the website to see the review that I will put up before Friday.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's next week's new releases. So
a mixed bag,
the big ones appear to be some pretty good ones. Yes. Locke especially gets my vote.
So Locke is an amazing film. We're the Best is also an amazing film. The Amazing Spider-Man is sadly best not amazing. Amazing, but
can we sue it for contravening the Trade Descriptions Act in that case?
No.
It's not amazing.
But some people will say that it's amazing, therefore...
Well, of course, it's a superhero movie. There are people who say Man of Steel is amazing. Idiots.
It really isn't.
It is not.
It depends
stop
on...
Stop it, Niall. It's not.
It depends on what you put the amazing
it,
before.
Stop it. No.
So we're moving on to the Universal slate. 2 weeks ago, we looked at the Warner Brothers slate for the rest of 2014. This time, we're looking at Universal, one of the other big studios. So at the weekend, as I was saying already, I went to Comic-Con in the RDS, MCM Comic-Con, and the only studio to have a presence there was Universal.
Well done, Universal.
And I was having a chat with some of the guys that were there, and they seemed very, very excited about their upcoming slate. So I thought, yeah, we'll have a look.
Universal have always been a pretty interesting studio. I mean, I still have enduring memories of just their old logos, and whenever I see it come up in front of a film, I always knew I'd be in for a good time.
The 8-bit version before Scott Pilgrim is hilarious.
That is. I always love it when studios do little variations on their logos. Like, I liked the one with the 20th Century Fox logo ahead of The Day After Tomorrow. Terrible film, but with the storm lashing behind it, it gave me a giggle.
Or the one they did for Futurama, where it was 20th Century Fox.
That's still my favourite thing ever.
or the green Warner Brothers one for The Green Lantern.
You sure so it was
But they also had a green one for The Matrix. I just got that. I'm slow.
Anyway, sorry. Though.
He's been drinking.
So have you.
Yes, neither here nor there. So the first film out of the Universal canon is coming up on May 3rd. Bad Neighbors. It's one of these rare films that's opening on a Saturday rather than on a Friday.
What?
Yeah, it's
a frat house comedy, and it's not opening on a Friday night.
Yeah.
That boggles the mind.
Tell me who's in this particular one.
Seth Rogen, Zac Efron.
I know. I don't care.
And the lovely Rose Byrne, who really needs to get a new agent.
Yes, seriously.
I don't care.
She was in X-Men First Class. She's in this. Rose, we love you too much to want you go down this road. Please.
The trailer looks kind of funny. No, it does, because Zac Efron plays the obnoxious neighbor next door to Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne's lovey-dovey couple.
Now, you see, this is my problem with all these kind of comedies. How does Seth Rogen always end up marrying or at least having sex with these incredibly attractive women?
Because he's a rich millionaire actor. Oh, sorry, that's not his character, I forgot.
He's a lovable, cuddly teddy bear.
Anyway,
we're all lovable cuddly teddy bears inside, Niall.
So Bad Neighbours looks like it could be at least interesting. It looks somewhat funny. I mean, the summer, we need a comedy. There's always
that's
a breakout
true.
Comedy every
true.
Summer, so
maybe.
This could be it. Although more likely is the one that follows 3 weeks later, Seth MacFarlane's A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Seth MacFarlane automatically, I'm thinking, oh no.
I wasn't a fan of Ted.
No.
I found it silly and pointless. I didn't find it funny.
Yeah, but
Family
it was
Guy is
incredibly
successful.
Years. Ted was incredibly successful.
But yeah, but that doesn't
good,
make it
though.
Good.
Yeah, but studios look for a hit.
Yeah, but I'm
rather
talking about
quality.
I'm talking about quality, not help.
I've seen the trailers for A Million Ways to Die in the West, and it has a sorry cast, and it has them getting injured in myriad ways, and so what?
It has, it's aiming for Blazing Saddles. That may be its best laugh.
Yeah, so we'll see. It could end up being Young Guns 2. We don't know.
If only it was that good.
It's got Charlize Theron, it's got Amanda Seyfried, it's got Liam Neeson, Giovanni Ribisi, Neil Patrick Harris, and Seth MacFarlane himself.
So my prediction, it'll waste all the women characters, like everything Seth MacFarlane does.
And knowing that it has Liam Neeson in it, it'll be in the Irish charts for at least 6 weeks.
I look forward to talking about it every week.
Although, the absolutely guaranteed smash hit of the summer for Universal is coming up on the 27th of June. Brendan O'Carroll's Mrs. Brown Boys, the movie.
Oh, I'm out.
This is one, right? I do not find Miss Brown Boys funny at all in any way, shape, or form.
No.
But I actually quite like Brendan O'Carroll as a person. He seems interesting enough. He's very successful. He's worked hard at this for a long time to get it to the level that's at. And yeah. I don't begrudge him the movie. If it works, it works. People got to see it, they got to see it.
It's not
for me.
Look, it is going to be a huge hit. Even though I think Mrs. Brown and that show in general, I think it's about as funny as an orphanage on fire.
No, it's not funny.
It's not.
But it is, but not for us.
It's base.
Jay,
whatever your name is, that sounds rather elitist, don't you think?
But it's not aimed at me, as Noel continuously points out.
We've just pointed out there's nothing aimed at you.
There is some things. Like miserable dramas or whatever.
Guns, cannons, yeah. Sharp sticks, whatever.
You do sound like the subject of a Dennis Leary song right now. I like, how does it go? I like porno and books about war and things like that.
To be honest, just get into it. Just because you're right doesn't make it.
The title of that song is also what Peter Serafinovich calls people in the Guardians.
I will not be going to see the Miss Brown Boys movie, but
plenty
I hope
of other people
well.
Will.
Good for him.
Universal are super duper excited. They've already changed their estimates twice as to what they think the UK the UK box office includes Ireland for some unknown reason.
It's huge in the UK.
Yeah, so,
huge.
So they're
really big in Australia as well. Weirdly.
Really?
Yeah. They're looking at 10 million in the UK box office, which would be absolutely marvellous. I think it'll exceed that.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
10 million.
Are you telling me that this is going to be the thing that will eventually beat the Lego movie this year?
I think this will make 3 in Ireland. Yeah.
This may be the point that one of us will walk from this podcast.
I think a round of whiskey is in order now.
I think potentially Mrs. Brown's Boys the movies could be the most successful Irish film ever made.
But is it Irish film?
It's filmed here. It was filmed here by an Irish director with an all-Irish cast. But
tell
financed,
me the film board threw something into it. Please tell me they got something into it.
Financed primarily by the BBC.
Nah.
So
film board could have done with 10% of that, I'd say.
Yeah.
And Universal.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I agree, though. I think it'll be huge.
I think we're looking
it'll be dreadful,
at
but it'll be huge.
Record box office.
Yeah. I'd say that's a good bet.
Because it's so popular with like rural Ireland.
But it's bland.
My mother loves it. That's not a guarantee of anything.
It caters to an audience that isn't catered
for. How often does your mother go to the cinema?
Well, I'll put it this way. The best review I've ever seen her give a film is when I finally got around to showing her Skyfall. Her review was thus: I'd watch that again.
Yeah, but
succinct.
I'm asking a very particular question. How often does your mother go to the cinema?
Practically never.
She will for this. This is
I'm not I'm taking her.
This,
yes, you were.
I am
the
not.
Way that, the way that in America, when a massive Christian film comes out, busloads of people go from the thing. This is going to have busloads of people go from the parish hall.
Are you suggesting Mrs. Brown's Boys is a potentially religious experience?
I think potentially that Mrs. Brown is a Masonic figure.
Messianic.
No, Masonic.
We've hit the conspiracy. I expect us to be all wiped out by the Illuminati by the end of the week.
If this is coming out, I'd be fine with that.
The Da Vinci Code is real. Moving on.
After that,
swiftly,
the release that, and the one by far and away, the one that I'm looking most forward to of the Universal slate, on the 11th of July, Richard Linklater's Boyhood.
Oh my goodness. This is the film I am most looking forward to the rest of this year. It's got rave reviews from Sundance.
Hearing voice. Sorry, excuse me.
It may or may not be.
I know.
See, I'm tempering
my...
Yes, I know. But Richard Linklater, I mean, even ignoring the fact that Before Midnight was a wonderful film, he is just the reviews have got me giddy. And I try to disregard other reviews ahead of time, but I don't know. He's just too good a director to ignore that kind of hype.
So it's the story. So basically, for the last 10, 15 years, Richard Linklater has been going and filming the life of a kid as he grows up. But it's not a documentary. It is an actual
feature
film. Yeah. It is scripted. And he's had Ethan Hawke all along as well. And is it Toni Collette?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think so. Yeah, it sounds extraordinary. It is a real time look at the
growing
as
up.
A kid growing up. Yeah. And
Sounds like a fantastic approach, filming the same childhood. It sounds like a more fun version of Heimat or Michael Apted's Up series.
Or Michael Winterbottom did it with John Sim and Shirley Anderson. Every Day, that's the one.
Which I didn't see, despite my love of Michael
Winterbottom. I like it. It's not one of his best, but it's very interesting.
I'll take that.
I do love Michael Winterbottom.
So 2 weeks later, on the 25th of July, Universal has The Purge Anarchy, the sequel to the Ethan Hawke starring The Purge, which squandered one of the greatest setups I've heard.
Great setup and absolutely drops the ball. It's awful.
It's just another home invasion movie at the end of it.
It's awful. Yeah, but it's even beyond that, it ruins it.
As high concepts go, what happens a great setup. For one day a year, all crime is legal.
Yeah, it's, but they botched it.
But they botched almost from the start. If you look at it again, I'm not getting into it because it annoys me so much, but it's god awful.
We can hope they tighten up
on
that.
So this is a chance to correct the ills of the former one.
Yes, agreed.
And the poster is incredible, where they basically replaced all of the red stripes in the American flag with like AK-47s.
I like it. It's important. I will say though, Universal, a poster does not a film make.
True.
I expect better things.
Yeah. And we say that to all the studios, right?
I know, to all the studios.
The following week, Universal is releasing Step Up All In. All in?
I have yet to see a Step Up movie. I'm sure
Jay, it's time to step up.
Indeed.
The first one has Channing
Tatum. I don't think they're aimed at me. I can see you in theme for today.
Dear. Yeah, no. Step Up is perfectly fine if that's what you're into. I mean, they are getting better.
I don't know what that means.
No, they are.
These kind of films, they have a set market. It's generally teenage girls.
Yeah.
And I think...
I've seen some of them, so that doesn't say that I'm sure you do just fine.
I'm getting giddy now.
It doesn't matter. We'll probably be rewatching Boyhood.
Yeah. The Master. Okay, 2 weeks after that, they have a film coming out called As Above, So Below.
Eh?
Yeah, I know absolutely nothing about that.
Sounds amazing. Yeah. What's next after that?
No idea. I'm moving on. Because the next week is the Luc Besson directed, Scarlett Johansson starring Lucy. Which has the best trailer of this year. It is.
It's a hell of a trailer. Again, no more than what we were saying about The Birds. A good trailer is not a good film make. And Luc Besson, I cannot recall the last time he made something that definitively.
Leon!
It was probably Leon.
This could Sad be Leon. And that's the. Because he has the potential to make another one.
As fun as that trailer is, I'm smelling more Fifth Element than Leon here.
Yeah, but.
God, I hate
it. Fifth Element.
It's beautiful to look at.
Costume designer is Jean-Paul Gaultier. There's got to be something good to look at. But then again, you have Chris Tucker in it. That is most annoying. It's dialogue all the way through.
Let's move away from the Fifth Element.
Please.
The basic plot of Lucy sees Scarlett Johansson as a drug smuggler who's the drugs within her leak into her system and she gets heightened powers.
Hero origin stories go. No, it's shaky, but still I like it.
It sounds fun.
Similar to the plot of Limitless, but this looks like they're actually taking it in a properly fun action film type way.
Right.
This is worth remembering that Luc Besson is the man responsible for Taken, and so is the singularly
the man responsible for everything.
Liam Neeson. Wolf Puncher and everything.
Are we far away from that movie being released? Liam Neeson, Wolf Puncher. I mean, surely there's a movie there just for that title.
Hey, if they can make Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, Liam Neeson, Wolf Puncher is
I'm in for 2015.
Well, it is. That's the grey.
I know, but I want more of it. I want the film.
Grey is a fine film.
Yeah.
We're getting 50 Shades of Grey, which is a universal release. Following on then in the 12th of September is Box Trolls, the new Leica animation. So these are the guys that made Paranorman.
Paranorman
was lovely. This really fine horror homage.
And this looks to be a lot of fun too. This looks beautiful.
I'm in for this.
Universal guys have said that they recognize that the Minions are by far and away the most popular part of Despicable Me, and that these box trolls, who are basically boxes inhabited by small trolls, but they all have distinct personalities. They all are boxy shaped. They're going to be shipping out loads of these to cinemas and giving them out to people.
I want one.
So it is.
I bet they look hideous, but I don't care.
No,
I want
them. They're cute.
Really?
Yeah.
As cute as the Minions?
Not as cute as the Minions.
Oh, well, there you go. I'll take one. So, reasonably pleased.
I'm getting giddy now. Yeah,
so what Universal are really pinning their hopes on, one of the big releases that they have coming out,
besides Mrs. Brown.
Besides Mrs. Brown, who is just going to make them more money than you can imagine, but this is for the American audience and their global audience, is that they are bringing Dracula back.
Another one?
Yeah.
So, first question, who's directing?
I can't remember.
I don't know. That's the problem. It's
right. If it's nobody, like, okay, who's playing?
Okay,
Dracula?
Tell me more.
Luke Evans is playing Dracula.
Ah, now I like Luke Evans, but we've had so many Dracula adaptations before. Gerard Butler played him at one point, and
oh, good lord!
Yeah, it doesn't matter who the director is. I mean, Gary Oldman was a fantastic Dracula, and still, even Francis Ford Coppola couldn't quite.
It's a hard story to crack.
It is. The problem is, it just seems deceptively simple. But nobody, in terms of icons, nobody tops Bela Lugosi. In terms of creepiness and some gore, nobody tops Hammer, Christopher Lee. So
yeah.
Why
they're attempting Dracula?
Oh, a lot of people play with Dracula.
Fantastic!
I'm sure
it is great.
Yeah. So why try again? Why? And of course, Nosferatu, the classic Dracula. Why try again? I can't. I just can't fathom this.
Well, this one's called Dracula Untold. So it's It's out 2 weeks before Halloween. So I mean, it should do pretty well. Luke Evans as Dracula is a fine concept.
It also stars Dominic Cooper, Sarah Gadon.
No, well, Dominic Cooper. There you are.
There's your first
time. This is getting less and less.
By the way, the director is a guy by the name of Gary Shore.
That's probably why I didn't remember who it was.
I'm out. Anyway, go on. Next one.
So after that, towards the end of the year, so it's the Thanksgiving release from the Universal in the US, is the Jeremy Renner starring Kill the Messenger. Now, this looks incredibly promising.
Indeed. It's got a heck of a cast. You have Jeremy Renner, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Barry Pepper. More Barry Pepper.
I like Barry Pepper.
And you like this. Robert Patrick.
It's about bloody time.
it's directed by Michael Cuesta, who is best known for directing gritty little thrillers as L.I.E. Felvin Holding. He's a fine director, so put him with an all-star cast and I think we're on something very interesting.
Yeah, so this is the story of a journalist. So yes, the story of a journalist who becomes the target of a smear campaign, which drives him to the point of suicide after he exposes the CIA's role in the in arming the Contra rebels in Nigeria. So
Nicaragua. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, or Nicaragua. Sorry, yeah. It is
very different.
Well, Contra rebels, wherever they happen.
So we're back to the '80s. This sounds really interesting,
doesn't it? Though,
based on a true story, so. There's always problems with that, but it looks like Jeremy Renner, when he's on form,
I don't know about that. Anyway, we'll see. I'm not as convinced on people as Jeremy Renner is.
Very well.
So they have the Universal of two Christmas movies.
Two.
They have a comedy and they have a drama. The drama, I imagine, is being aimed at the Oscars. That is Angelina Jolie's sophomore feature.
Yeah. Sophomore.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Unbroken.
I'm getting antsy now. So, Unbroken.
I saw it in the Land of the Lonely. It's pretty good. It's a little simplistic on occasion, but it's an interesting story. It's set in kind of a Serbian kind of kind of war, the kind of the Balkan War kind of thing. It's really interesting.
I admire anybody who's willing to give that conflict or to try and tackle it on the screen.
And I think she does an authentic, interesting story, a little cliched here and there, but interesting.
And so what's this one then?
So Unbroken has got Donald Gleeson in it, so we have an Irish interest immediately, and it also has the sort of Hollywood debut of Jack O'Connell.
The startup
actor who is, he's an extraordinary young talent.
Oh, I'm intrigued by this.
So Unbroken is the story of the Olympic runner Louis Zapparini, who was taken prisoner by Japanese forces during World War II. So it's a based on a true life story. Jai Courtney is also in it.
Oh dear.
Yeah, so
I mean, sounds interesting. I like the sound of it.
I don't know, we had something similar to that recently, the film The Railway Man with Colin Firth, which did very little business, it got very little attention. I don't know, I think it'll be what Jolie does with the material that'll make or break it. I'm interested to see it though.
Here's one that you may be less interested to see. It's the last one on the Universal slate. It is Jim Carrey and Jeff Bridges reuniting for Dumb and Dumber 2.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this.
Jeff Bridges. Yeah. You had me at Jeff Bridges. It's Jeff Daniels.
No, Jeff Bridges. Nah. Be much more interesting.
Do you know what? I would give Dumb and Dumber 2 a chance who doesn't love Dumb and Dumber?
Actually, interesting enough, The Guardian have this guilty pleasure series on their site and their newspapers, I presume. And somebody named Dumb and Dumber as a guilty pleasure, and I was like, are you insane? Dumb and Dumber is brilliant. It's not a guilty pleasure.
There's nothing
guilty pleasure is something that you consider awful that you love.
Yes.
That does not apply in this regard, because Dumb and Dumber is brilliant and universally loved. Yeah. Sorry, and Dumb and Dumber 2, can't wait.
It'll be stupid, but it'll also be a lot of fun. And those two characters, as stupid as they are, those actors, they just bring a lot of heart to them.
And Jim Carrey is amazing as an actor. I think he's an amazing actor.
And that role just gave him so much that he could bring his physical dexterity to. And Jeff Daniels just relishing chance to play this role.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
I can't wait either. That's actually more. I'm most excited about that film of the whole slate.
Hey, more than Boyhood.
It's up there. Sadly. That's the guilty pleasure part of it. Oh.
So this is a film that is aimed at you. Dumb and Dumber 2.
For all my pretentious pandering to dark dramas, it's Dumb and Dumber 2.
This just leaves me with one question. You know what the most annoying sound in the world is?
Yeah,
sorry.
So when I was talking to the Universal guys, they were suitably excited about this. They also are saying that absolutely nowhere in the marketing material will it mention the fact that Dumb and Dumber ever existed.
It doesn't, despite the presence of Eugene Levy. It does not exist.
I've never seen it. I never will.
Don't.
It beds me.
All of the sort of non-canon American Pie films also contain Eugene Levy.
See, then again, you can't make me watch those. You can't. You won't. I'm not.
Won't we?
You can borrow my box set.
No, thank you. I'm good. I'd rather borrow your extended edition of The Grandmaster. Thanks very much.
Yes.
I have Blu-ray now. I can do this.
Yes, indeed. And my 75th anniversary edition of Citizen Kane.
Oh, I envy you.
The Kane from Citizen Kane.
There's no Kane in Citizen Kane.
There damn well should be.
Yeah.
They should.
So on that bombshell,
that is a wonderful way to finish any
Indeed.
We'll leave it there.
Till next week, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Bye.